Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 337 of Longbox Heroes. Joe and Todd joining you here on this East Coast snowy day.
Isn't it Stella? Snowstorm Stella?
I don't give snowstorms names. I don't name inanimate things like snowstorms or boats or anything else like that.
The Unsinkable Three. That's my boat someday.
Did you see that they had discovered another planet?
No.
And they took a poll of people, like, what they wanted the planet to be named.
Mm-hmm. Todd?
No. Most of the names that were submitted and voted upon were the names of the Fast and the Furious films.
Oh, good.
This is why people should not be allowed to name things.
They should name it Planet Lexor, like the one Lex Luthor ruled back in the late 70s, early 80s.
That's acceptable.
I would totally go to Lexor.
Right. And somebody else pointed out that we're still, you know, there's a whole thing of like, oh, we need to figure out this once we colonize the moon. Like, it's been 50-some years. Haven't we moved on to something else other than the moon? There's at least dozens of other things out there. And there's stuff about they're trying to classify the moon as a planet now. And then
it's
they're
not
trying,
a planet.
Right, and then they're trying to reclassify Pluto as a planet, where it was a planet, and then it wasn't a planet. Now they're trying to get it back planet status.
Oh, my goodness. It had its planet status revoked.
It did. And now they're trying to get it its planet status back. Does anyone care about any of this?
I care about Pluto.
Okay.
I was sad when Pluto was demoted. I was like, oh my God, like how's it going to support its wife and kids? But I don't know. I'm a big like astronomy mark, like no word to lie, Joe. If I knew math, I would have went into some kind of like science with like studying the stars or the planets. That's like my love. I'll watch Science Channel, History, like any of that when it's the universe all day, all night, and just soak it all in.
So you're like, the one who cares about this stuff with the planets, but yet you didn't know about this stuff with the planets.
Well, it hasn't been on the latest like TV show that I watched. I don't have time to be searching the internet for planet news.
They didn't bring up Pluto's planet status on the latest episode of The Gilmore Girls.
Oh my goodness, I would totally watch that.
Anyway, we do have stuff to talk about in the world of comics this week, just not a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a very light week of news, but what a news story coming across the wire at the last minute before we started recording.
Mm-hmm.
We've got conventions going on this weekend, we've got digital sales and freebies, all new stuff. And then we have what we read from this past week. Hal Jordan of the Green Lantern Corps number 16, Copperhead number 11, and Jessica Jones numero uno 6. Not 1-6, but numero 6.
I was going to say, what are you talking about? But go ahead.
It's been a long day, Todd.
What? It's been a short day.
What we're looking forward to coming out this week, of course, as well as Todd and Joe have issues, and TV talk with discussion of The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and The Walking Dead. Was that an attempt at a zombie noise?
I could do zombie noises all day, but, you know, even better than Jay Moore, I can do zombie noises.
It's not this show to do impressions or to talk about Jay Moore.
I'll talk about Jay Moore and more.
No. So it was a light news week. Was almost going to be no news segment until late in the evening on Tuesday. As we know, Valiant is optioning a lot of their stuff to be made into movies. I think Bloodshot is the first one that's going to be coming out. But it just recently came out that Joe and Anthony Russo, who are the directors on your Winter Soldier, your Infinity War, and so on and so forth, are going to be the producers for the first Valiant TV show. And that TV show is going to be the much-missed Quantum and Woody.
Hmm, I wonder if they'll support that with a comic when it comes out.
Oh, man.
But I saw this and I was like, oh, boy. I'm looking forward to this. Now, granted, the Russos aren't, you know, directing like they did other stuff, but they're producing. So it's definitely in a good set of hands. And if the stair car doesn't show up or the cornballer, I'm going to be very mad. Every time.
If there was ever a show for that stuff to, a comic adaptation for that stuff to appear in, mm-hmm. this would be the one.
Yep. Clang.
So, yeah, Quantum and Woody is a great comic book series. This is a book that we used to talk about all the time here on the show when mm-hmm. they were still putting this book out.
Heck, we interviewed one of the writers of Quantum and Woody.
That's right, James Asmus, writer of that. I think he's currently writing the Kong book for Boom.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to read it because I didn't want the movie spoiled on me.
That's right. There's a giant monkey in it.
I just wonder if in the book when he writes it, he's writing it to a CGI ape or a guy in an ape costume.
Well, maybe it switches back and forth. So you're like, oh, that in the costume looks good, but that CGI looks terrible.
But Todd, again, you bring up a good point, of course. The most important thing is if this TV show is at least having a production team announced, no start date, release date, other casting of any kind has been put out there. Mm-hmm. At the very least, this might light a fire under someone to get this book out again.
Who knows? Maybe this is why it was in hiatus.
Maybe.
You don't know. We don't know the legal wranglings. Maybe there was something going on. People need to get paid and stuff happens and... I would like a great TV show and a great comic with Quantum and Woody, and I would be so happy. Just for a live action goat is gonna be pretty good. That is what I hope for. And then my goat action figures, both the regular and the variant, will go up from all those years ago.
What is the variant? I forget.
I think it was one had a blue cape with a white W on it, and one had a white cape with a blue W on it. And you could order the one like as many as you wanted, and you just pay for them. And then the other one was for every 10 copies or 5 copies, I don't remember the exact number, of a certain issue of Quantum. Maybe it was the GOAT issue actually. You could get one of the variants. And basically at our local retail, I was just like, buy 10 copies. If you have to pay for the figure, I want the figure, and then just burn those 10 copies. Like if his numbers were 20 at the time,
yeah.
I was like, get 30, you get your 2, I get my 1, but I only need 20. I don't care. I'm buying the other 10, you know what I mean?
Right.
And if you want, or if you just want one of them, buy 20. I don't remember how he did it. But in the end, I was just like, keep those 10 copies and give me my figure.
You know, it was a simpler time to get variants back then, wasn't it?
Oh, my goodness,
it's
yes.
It's as clear as mud.
Yeah, well, that was different. Now it's like, oh, if you get your, you know, 200% of, you know, Civil War 2 number 8 for Squirrel Girl number 5, then you can get this variant. It's like, yeah, I'm sure I'm going to sell 200% more than Civil War 8 of Squirrel Girl. Ugh, just give me my figure. That's all I wanted. And back then, comics were cheaper, so it wasn't as bad.
Yeah, they were $1.95, I think, instead of $3.99.
Like, yeah. So it was a $19 figure, plastic chunk, with no... I think it actually... I have to find it, but I think it actually touted that it had no articulation.
Right, I remember it had either no articulation or it said, like, the in-action figure.
That's what it might have been, the in-action goat figure.
Yeah.
Oh, so good times.
Yeah, so either way, I'm glad to see that Quantum and Woody is a property that Valiant cares about getting done by getting a good production team on it. And I'm sure the show will be... okay, I'm sure the show will be fine to people like you and I.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it might be confusing to a lot of other people just because of it's like a funny thing, but not like funny like comic book movies today are funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a comedy book that just happens to have superhero stuff in it as opposed to a superhero stuff that might have some comedy in it.
And now's the time to have that racial edge, too. Mm-hmm. We'll go over well.
Right. Oh, yes. I remember those issues. That's where stuff's not going to fly in 2000 whenever this show comes out.
The original Bright and Priest issues? Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It was a different time, Todd. You can't judge.
I'm not judging. I have them in one of my boxes.
Yeah, that's another one of those ones where I have the single issues. I have the not the trades, but I have like whatever trades they did have of those when they first came out. I know they recently redid the trades.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get those, but I think they only put out two trades of the first run. Yes.
Of the original run, I don't know, because I bought the omnibus that they did.
Okay, now see, in this, and then I also have them digitally as well.
I'm mad that they never put out that. Remember they said they had a whole issue, like, done?
Well, they never did digitally, didn't they?
They might have done it digitally. I thought it would be in the omnibus, but it wasn't, which I thought was a big jip.
Yeah, I'm almost certain that it's in the digital versions.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's our news. Quantum and Normandy TV show, Russo Brothers, one day.
You don't need any other news than just the hint of a Quantum and Woody TV show.
Right. So let's get into convention stuff. There's actually a bunch of conventions going on this weekend. There is the NC Comic-Con in Bull City, North Carolina. It's got a bunch of comic book-type folk there. Your Larry Hamas, John Barber, who does the Transformers books, Neil Adams, Jeremy Whitley, who's currently doing the Wasp book, and I'm sure a lot of other North Carolina native folks.
The Larry Hama thing is actually cool. I found online a Kickstarter for a Larry Hama G.I. Joe figure.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
That is too cool, because he's like the king of G.I. Joe comics.
Well, not only the king of G.I. Joe comics, but he also wrote the flavor text on mm-hmm. all of the file cards that came in the back of G.I. Joe's.
That's right. He wrote the Major Blood poetry, the bad Major Blood poetry on the back of his.
And I also remember on the back of Cobra Commander's file collector card that he was a used car salesman
mm-hmm.
who decided to join Cobra because he thought it would be a way to bilk people out of money and then became the head of the organization and found out what they were really about. World domination.
Well, hey, most used car dealers dream of that.
And then the cartoon turned him into a snake man of some kind.
That's right. When they took all the great people and made Serpantor. That's good stuff right there.
Just call him Serpantor?
Serpantor.
Is he half snake, half panther? Is that what you're saying?
I think he was half snake, half pants. Oh, half what pants. He was.
Oh, my goodness. So also, and I'm going to butcher all the pronunciation here, is the La Mole Comic-Con in Ciudad, Mexico.
Nailed it.
This is actually a huge for comic creator convention. Nick Spencer, Erica Henderson, Greg Capullo, Adam Hughes, Kevin Eastman, J.M. DeMatteis, Carl Kessel, Yannick Paquette, Steve Englehart, Frank Thierry. It's like everyone who actually does actual comic books is going to be at this one.
Wonder how they're getting paid.
They even have a name for it. They go, give me the Flare Piper. There's a difference between the Flare Piper or the Piper Flare. I think one is in a certain type of spittoon.
And one's a certain type of cut.
Right. Or the other one, I think, is in certain bags that you could put inside your pants.
Or it with a snake.
Right. So we also have Wizard World in Cleveland this weekend. And, we're going to get a little bit more into your media-heavy ones here. Wizard World Cleveland has Gene Simmons of Kiss.
Well, I think you have to pay him for saying that.
Becky Lynch.
I know her.
I know. You remember her.
Mm-hmm.
And of special notice to you, Todd, both Mickey Dolenz and Peter Tork are going to be there.
Oh, but as long as they don't have that guy who doesn't even have his own hat.
I was going to say, they're going to just have a hat on like a mannequin head there with them.
Oh, the like from the Wax Museum, just a Hey, there's our Wax Nesmith.
This is the first time to see any members of the Monkees doing a convention like this.
Mm-hmm.
One can only imagine that they're maybe in town or something.
I don't know. Maybe they're going on tour. Maybe they're doing the. Maybe they've caught the bug, doing these cons and making some money off it. I don't know.
I guess I'm just surprised that Papa Nez isn't there.
Oh my good, Why would anybody go? Why would anybody go if Papa Nez wasn't there?
Right.
Oh.
I know how to get your goat, literally.
Oh my goodness. My inaction goat?
You're an action figure goat, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side of the coin, a little bit further out west, is the Salt Lake Comic Con in Salt Lake City, Utah. Stan Lee is allegedly going to be there. I know he was supposed to be at a convention this past weekend, and at the last moment, of course, they canceled on him. I'm going to do my best to try not to be grim on this one, but I could certainly see Stan Lee canceling more and more comic appearances here in the near future.
I'm wondering if a lot of these cons are just using Stan's name to sell tickets with no intention of him ever showing up.
That is dirty pool.
I mean, that has never happened in any other industry, so this might be the first time.
Well, I know, I can't remember what convention it was last weekend. I think it was Big Apple that had Stan Lee, and then they replaced him with Jim Lee, his son, shortly thereafter. No, but Jim Lee is not his son, but they did replace him with Jim Lee afterwards, and essentially, like, whatever Stan Lee stuff that you got, you can get a refund on, or, you know, go toward whatever the Jim Lee stuff was, and I don't think Jim Lee charged any more or less than what the Stan Lee stuff was.
Right. And I thought Stan Lee was like, didn't, do you remember, like, it was like, this is going to be the last year of cons that I do.
I think last year they said it was the last year of cons that he was going to do.
Exactly. And now, like, when I saw these shows, I don't know if he's actually done any. I was like, this doesn't seem legit to me, but you never know.
He did that one at the beginning of the year.
The New Year's Eve one.
Yes.
Which I figured was maybe his last hurrah, even though it went into the next day, which I'd give him some leeway on that.
Sure.
But then when I saw more showing up, I was like, I don't know.
Well, again, speaking of conventions that Stan Lee's not going to be at the Salt Lake, or that he is going to be at, rather, Stan Lee is going to be there. But almost as importantly, Judge Reinhold is going to be there. Wallace Shawn is going to be there.
Who's Wallace Shawn?
He is the guy from Princess Bride who says, "Inconceivable!"
Oh, he's the he's the Grand Nagus from Deep Space Nine.
Careful. He's also the voice of Rex from the Toy Story films.
Yeah, I know who he is, yeah.
Yeah. But for me, I think this is at least the first time in a long time, or at the very least a first-time appearance, Weird Al Yankovic is going to be there.
Oh my goodness.
Uh-huh.
Would you get a photo with Weird Al? Is
Absolutely.
That your Mark photo?
You didn't even have to finish that statement. If there was a convention within a 3-hour radius of here that Weird Al Yankovic was going to be at, absolutely, I'm going.
Oh my goodness. Get your Eat It album signed?
Sure. I do have the Weird Al in 3D vinyl somewhere. And not in a hipster way that I just bought it recently in some new pressing. Like, I think I bought it in 1984 when it came out.
You didn't get it on the hipster corner of Scranton?
No, I did not.
near the vinyl place and the barbershop and the vegan store? I call it the vegan store.
The vegan store. They sell vegans there by the pound.
I would totally eat vegans by the pound.
I've actually eaten there. It's a really good place.
That's fantastic. We'll discuss when the mics are off.
All right. I'm writing that down.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear me writing?
Yes, I did.
All right. So the links to all these conventions, if you're going to be near any of those, will be in the show notes, as well as links to the soon-to-be-named network. soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. And Todd, I'm going to do this as quickly as I can. You've got us, Longbox Heroes, Longbox Heroes After Dark. Prodigal Sons Podcast, Prime Defective, Fresher in Parlance, Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, Paladins of Voltron, Talkin' Gimmicks, Aim Downsight Podcasts. These shows come out at varying levels of frequency, You could subscribe to them all individually, or you could just go to soontobenamednetwork.com. Whenever the episodes come out, they will be there.
Mm-hmm.
I make it easy. Or follow the Soon to Be Named Network Twitter, which is STBN Network on Twitter. And every time a new episode of any of those shows go up, it gets tweeted out from there as well.
Could be good. Yep.
This is what I try to do for everyone, Todd. I try to make things as easy as possible.
And you do. You succeed at that.
Now, let's not go crazy. So into digital sales and freebies this week, there's a bunch of new stuff on sale. Dark Horse is having a variety of their books written by Brian Wood on sale. IDW still has their Star Trek stuff on sale, as well as Gem and the Hologram stuff on sale. Marvel is having a sale on a variety of Iron Fist stuff. And it's as though there might be some sort of Iron Fist thing coming out soon. Titan is also having a sale and on what they're qualifying as TV favorites. Now, I do want to point out to you, Todd, in their TV favorites sale, they have The Blacklist, they have Sherlock, they have Heroes, they have Vikings, they have Penny Dreadful. You know what they don't have in their TV favorites sales, Todd?
What?
Doctor Who. You know why?
Why?
Because it's no one's favorite TV show.
Could I counter that argument?
Go ahead.
It's because they don't have to put those books on sale, because people would pay three times the price for them.
If you say so.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other sale that's going on, and this is one of the things that kind of, I don't want to say bothers me, but if you go to Comixology, they have like a little scroll, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, here's a bunch of sales stuff. Here's some new release stuff, and then here's like one or two featured things. And every now and then, a sale just like slips through the cracks for some reason. This time, the DC Batwoman sale is just like, nah, it's not here. You have to go digging for it. And then when you go to the sales page, like the little sales tab, it's like fourth down.
It's not like they have a book out or anything like
right.
that.
And the only reason I bring this up is because included in that sale is that run on Detective Comics that kind of launched the character that Greg Rucka did.
Mm-hmm.
That is some of the best comics of all time.
Yes, it is.
And I would also want to point out in that sale as well is the first three issues of the DC Rebirth Detective Comics. And again, I pointed out as well, because typically DC doesn't put their stuff, the Rebirth stuff, on sale, and Detective Comics is one of the better books being put out by DC right now, and if you were on the fence about it, you could pick up the first three issues for $4. Digitally, of course.
Right.
And you don't have to have anybody harping over your shoulder determining and judging you whether or not you picked out the right cover or not.
Oh, that would be the worst. I couldn't even imagine what kind of hassle that would be.
I'm glad that you said hassle. I thought you said something else.
No, I said hassle.
All right. Also in the new freebies available is Origin number 2, Origin 2 number 1, the sequel to the hit Origin comic. About Wolverine's origin. I forget what happens in this one, but I know it's a lot of stuff with, like, maybe, like, gypsies or something. And if you remember from last week's episode, my feelings on gypsies. Also, the first issue of Rogue's ongoing series from the mid-2000s that doesn't exist anymore. The Brian Michael Bendis Secret War book about, like, the guy who makes all the stuff for your techno-villains and whatnots.
Mm-hmm.
And then the McFarlane drawn and written Spider-Man number 1. Those are your Marvel freebies this week, and at least for the next 2 weeks or so.
I wonder if they have the platinum covers on Spider-Man number 1.
Didn't we do an episode about this where they need to do digital variants and that's where the money is?
They do. They really do.
Yes. Two different books that we talked about where, one, you have to choose the different cover for your digital book since they're 50-50s in print. I wonder if you do get both covers if you buy, like, those new DC books digitally.
I know on some of the like, image books and stuff like that, I've seen in some of the other digital stuff that we've gotten, that they have the multiple covers on them. You know what I mean? Like, you have to scroll through three covers and stuff like that. They should make it programmable so you can choose the cover you want, and the other two go, like, into the bin in case you want them later.
Into the bin. What are you, British?
I don't know.
Oh, boy.
I wish I was, because that country's cool.
Anyway. No, it's not. Mm. Well, let's get into what we read from this past week. Todd, where would you like to begin?
I would like to start with my pick of the week with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number 16, by Robert Venditti and Rafa Sandoval, I'm going with. I think I nailed it.
You did good. Much better than I usually do.
In this, there's a side tale of, you know, Hal bringing back St. Walker, the Blue Lantern, and Kyle to the Guardians. And there's, another subplot of John being mad at Guy because he's gone off and doing something. But the important story, Joe, the important story is that since the Sinestro Corps and Green Lanterns are working together and there's only room for one jerk in the whole thing, Guy has decided that it's a no-holds-barred, ringless fight between him and, I want to make say, is it Akrillo? Because I always get that, whether
Arkillo.
The R is it. Arkillo. Between him and Arkillo, and for bragging rights and stuff like that. And this is one of the most knockdown, drag out, brutal fights I have ever seen in a mainstream superhero comic in a long time. And Guy, you know, you get a bit of Guy's backstory, which depending on which one you get, got over the retcons over the years, this has always been it, that his father's been a jerk and been a bit abusive, and he uses that. But my God, I love this issue, and more Robert Venditti is, I don't know if I've said this on here before in the shop, that after, you know, the Justice League run of Guy Gardner, Robert Venditti gets the silver medal for writing Guy, as far as I'm concerned. And that's high praise from me.
Right, as Todd mentioned, kind of just to echo those same sentiments, this is a really good issue. And they leave things on a cliffhanger as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to find out in 2 weeks, of course, how everything kind of pans out, perhaps. I do have a feeling everything is going to work out for the best, but it really kind of put out there, if you are new to Green Lantern type things, Venditti is doing a very good job of fleshing out our four main Earth Green Lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
And as Todd mentioned, he has a better handle on Guy than anyone has over the last, you know, 25, 30 years, from that J.M. DeMatteis, Keith Giffen run on him. You know, even though these characters kind of got a little bit of a resurgence when Jeff Johns was writing the book, at the end of the day, the Jeff Johns Green Lantern stuff was about Hal and everyone else second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd get little bits and pieces of these characters. I think the closest that we came, it was like a two panel. It would be like, well, one panel and one full page. If you remember from the Blue Beetle book.
Right.
During, you know, when that whole thing wrapped up and it was the whatever surviving members there were of Justice League International that were left, and they all come to help Jaime Reyes, and the daughter, like, kind of says to someone off panel, it's like, I know you, you're the jerk. And then we turn the page and it's that full page shot of Guy just saying, yeah, that's right, I am the jerk.
And then great shot.
Well, right. And I've mentioned this here on the show before, but it bears repeating. As I read that book, I stopped reading the book, put it down, looked up the artist Raphael Albuquerque online, and contacted him about purchasing that page. And Todd, wouldn't you know it, in the however many hours that book was out, the page was already gone.
Shocking.
Somebody was much quicker than I was in getting that. It was just such a beautiful shot, kind of encapsulating exactly who that character was. But obviously, that's a much narrow cast version of Guy, where this issue is much more nuanced, where you get to see a little bit more of what makes Guy tick and the way that the reasons the way that he is and sort of that sort of thing. But it was a great fight as well. And I know that you said it was one of the more gruesome knockdown, drag out fights, I guess, if you will. I will say this. I still read Invincible by Robert Kirkman. And, you know, Kirkman does a lot of violence in Walking Dead, but that's not a superhero comic. It's not in color. Invincible is in color. Lots and lots of reds in that book.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say that this had a little bit more powerful of a punch, pun intended, than the stuff that goes on in Invincible. Not to say that what goes on in Invincible isn't gruesome and grotesque at times.
Right. I just don't see this in a lot of DC books, is what
right.
I'm saying.
No,
Invincible
no, no,
isn't...
No.
Is another story, but I don't know, because if I saw it in an Image book, I'd be like, oh, okay. But I don't know. There's something like you're on this turf and you're seeing these things happen. It makes it, I have a different set of scales for like DC versus Image.
And I got
this was just, like, wow, for DC. Okay.
Yeah. But still really good. The story is just trucking along and it's great. It's the best that Green Lantern has been in almost, you know, 9-10 years.
Mm-hmm. And I just love that it's called, you know, The Quest for Hope Part 3, High Noon, and that sums up, there's not a better title for an issue.
Yeah. So my book that I was most looking forward to coming out this week was Copperhead number 11, written by Jay Farber, with art by Drew Moss. Now, as we had talked last week, the book hasn't been out for about the better part of 5 months, which does happen from time to time with an Image book, but this is the beginning of a new story arc, but it is picking up from where the last storyline left off, so I did have to go and kind of refresh myself, so sadly not the best jumping on point, but it does a very good job of reestablishing a lot of these characters' relationships. The lead character, who's the sheriff of Copperhead, which is kind of a mining, kind of an old westy sort of feeling town, but it's in outer space, and there's a lot of, it mixes sci-fi and westerny stuff very well, where there are scenes where you have a giant, like, 8-foot-tall dog-faced looking alien creature, essentially speaking to Space Boss Hog. You know, it's that sort of stuff. So the book, though, starts off, like, hot and running with Clara, the sheriff, walking into the sheriff's office, or the sheriff, the mayor's office, and the mayor has been killed. So there's your through line for the book of who killed the mayor, but obviously it's being used by the seedy underbelly of the town to kind of put into place who they want as mayor.
Mm. Power play.
Right. But there's still the mystery of who killed the mayor. Obviously, we know the why if they killed the mayor, but not who killed the mayor. It may seem clear as to who killed the mayor, or it could be the underworld types just using this as a perfect opportunity to kind of put their person into play, like calling together an emergency town meeting while the sheriff is off on this wild goose chase to figure this out, and then putting someone into place as the mayor that is going to kind of put the screws to her a little bit.
It was probably the person you least suspect.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. I'm glad this book is back. I'm not doing a great job of selling it because it's very tough to kind of get into all the interplay of these characters because, like I said, it's not the best jumping on point for a book that's been off for 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely check it out. I highly recommend this book.
Okay.
So last but not least, one of the other books that we're going to be discussing this week is Jessica Jones number 6. Written by Brian Michael Bendis, with art by Michael Gatos. Another one of those books that ships with two different covers, like the DC books.
Mm-hmm.
I always get the Michael Gatos covers, if I can.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out who... Mac, I get the Mac covers.
Just because, or you don't have a preference?
I like the David Mack cover myself. I'm looking on this, and I don't see inside here. It says David Mack cover or variant cover by David Marquez. Mm. Did you say Marquez?
No, I didn't, because this says that on Marvel's website, it says the cover is by Michael Gatos.
Is it the one with, I don't know, I'm trying to see... What would be on it? I don't know. I'm thinking you're actually thinking of the Mac cover.
Anyway.
But I could be wrong. Well, let's not draw it out.
Right. So, we said this before, because this is a book that we've actually talked about, I think, almost every issue that has come out except for one.
Mm-hmm.
Here on the show, because I am a Brian Michael Bendis fan. Because of how strong so much of his earlier work was. And I hold it in such high regard. Specifically, Alias, which is the book that this is the, the successor to. You know, he did in between there a book called The Pulse, which was a little bit more inside the Marvel Universe than Alias or This Is. Even though this is very much inside of the Marvel Universe, it was tough to figure out where things kind of fit in. But now that we know where everything fits in, it makes a little bit more sense. This is the big reveal. Did Jessica really betray Carol Danvers in her scheme, Carol's scheme, that is, pronouns, pal, to get Jessica to go to jail, suck her and that woman who's trying to bring all the superheroes down? We get the big reveal of that. But there's still two more dangling plot threads that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, while I did like the resolution of that, I guess what you would call the A storyline, right?
Right.
Bendis has been accused many times in the past of writing for the trade. Where, whether the story is a one-issue story or a 20-issue story, it's getting into six issues, because that's how many typically are in a trade. One of the three ongoing stories has been wrapped up. The other two are in the middle and just beginning. So, it's as though this is going to be one continuous thing, like with no definitive, like, end point, I guess.
Right.
Because, like, you know, obviously, once the A story begins and ends, there's your story. There's your six issues or whatever it is. But because the other two storylines, I feel, have the same weight as the main story. And the other two storylines being, of course, the guy from the Ultimates universe who killed his wife, who somehow stuck in our universe, and then all the stuff with their Luke Cage and their daughter.
Right.
Those two storylines, to me, are just as important as the stuff with Carol Danvers.
Which, I'm of the same mind as you that the story of the Carol Danvers was the A story, but in storytelling terms. But to me, the story with Luke Cage is the A story.
Right.
Because it's bigger and more personal. But it's not the A story. I mean, you just look at it, I'm like, I want to see where that goes, because that is amazing. And the whole thing of Iron Fist talking with Luke Cage to figure out, to give him the clues for the answer that he needs. And Iron Fist is just like, really? Like, really? Like, you don't see where you should be going? And he's just like, no, man. And he's like, so then this. And it's just like one of those aha moments, and it's fantastic. And then that leads to the ending where the mother is telling Jessica, like, you know, what Luke has said. And you're like, yes, this was said, you know, a couple issues ago. And the weight of those words is falling right here, right now. Like, you set it up, you knocked it down later, and you want to see where this goes. And even the Ultimate storyline with the guy who killed his wife, to me, that's like a little, like, still less, because it's just the whole thing of the betrayal to Luke, especially in Luke's mind. You know, it's just really good. And I think the thing that helps this book is when we really talk about it. I don't know if I was talking with you at the shop about this or somebody else about Jessica Jones. When it comes down to it, the only person who's really ever written Jessica Jones is Brian Michael Bendis, which I think helps a lot, because it's one vision and it doesn't muddy up the thing. So he knows where he wants to go. And there's just, it just helps a lot when you have one writer on a character for a long, long time.
I think you're right. I think she's shown up here and there.
Right. She's going to have guest appearances written by somebody else. But, I mean, in long storylines.
Because I think she popped up in some early issues of the current Power Man and Iron Fist book. And one of the online complaints about her appearances there is how out of character she's written.
Mm-hmm. And it really stands out when, yeah, you know, because of that.
Because the book is good, but then, like, her bits and pieces don't fit into the way that she's written elsewhere. For sure. It's like, you make a great point that Bendis is the one that gets her because he kind of created her from whole cloth.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then the one other little bit, of course, that I want to mention, that they used to do a little bit more in Alias, obviously. Alias, I think, had like 20-some-odd, almost, you know, 24, whatever it was, issues. We're only 6 issues into this, where we get the flashbacks to when Jessica Jones was Jewel, and she's fighting, like, other superheroes.
Oh, boy. Fighting Doc Ock?
Yes.
Just, oh, boy, just shaming him.
Yes.
Just shaming him.
Those sort of things were always fun when Bendis would do those in Alias, so I was pleasantly surprised to see it here. So, this was a book that kind of got off to a little bit of a shaky start only because I think, you know, we as a reader were kind of lost as to where it was going, but once the pieces are all into place, which they get there by issue 3, everything kind of makes sense, and if you weren't ready for the ride then, that would have been a perfect time to jump off it, but I think it's a great book. It's, like I said, probably Bendis' best stuff that he's done in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that covers what we've read from this past week. Let's get into what we're most looking forward to coming out this week, if the books ever show up.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
They might come in on skis.
So every Tuesday, usually around 5:30 Eastern time, sometimes earlier, rarely earlier, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them mailed to your house, whether you get them in trade. A lot of these ways might be difficult for you if you live on the East Coast, but anyway, be forewarned, be forearmed, before you leave the house, know if your books are going to be there, let alone what you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Every week, 2 things happen with the poll post. 1, Todd and I break out how many of each book by each publisher that we're getting. And 2, we also attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. I think it's still you with 6 correct guesses and me with 3 correct guesses.
You keep track of it.
Right. Let's say that that's correct.
All right.
So let me look at your list, and I am going to guess the book you are most looking forward to coming out this week is Kill or Be Killed number 7?
No, it is not.
Woo!
It is, I am looking forward to Batwoman number 1. I enjoyed the rebirth, and that was more of a sum up of her, like, her history, and now I want to see what they're going to do with what's happening. I'm very interested, especially after that, like, classic, like, here's 3 months into her future, 6 months into her future kind of panel storytelling, and it just looks so good.
I concur.
So, I'm looking over your books, and is it also Batwoman number 1?
No, it is Kill or Be Killed number 7.
Oh, we flip-flopped.
For some of the reasons that we discussed here on the show last week, that this is a jumping on point of a different character in the book. But my number 2 would have been Batwoman number 1.
Look at us, almost simpatico in a good way.
Almost simpatico in a good way. So no movement on the guessing of who's correct on that sort of thing or not. But yeah. So those are 2 books that I expected us to be talking about next week anyway, and I'm sure we'll have much more to discuss then as well.
Mm-hmm.
So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the other stuff that's there, whether it be past editions of The Pull Post, past editions of Todd and Joe Have Issues, past editions of this show, past editions of After Dark if you're not a iTunes or whatever podcatcher subscriber or a direct link type person like me, the correct way to listen to podcasts. You could also check out our little button there for store, purchase a sticker or a shirt directly from us. No middleman on either one of those. The money comes directly to us. Support local artists, blah, 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 blah. Another way that you could support us in our non-ad show is clicking on our Amazon link across the top of the page. Whatever you purchase from Amazon will not cost you a nickel extra, but it will give us a couple cents on the back end, which helps us just to be happy, really. You know, I'm not going to mention server costs or anything else like that. It just makes me happy when I see people purchasing cool stuff through our Amazon link.
Yeah, me too.
Things such as the Retractigate safety gate.
Ooh.
And the Retractigate stair banister.
Hmm.
Someone also purchased the Ernie Ball 5-string regular slinky nickel wound bass set.
Like bass? Like a BASS?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Bassists. They're the best.
Especially when they buy their fancy strings through our Amazon click through.
Mm. I wonder if it's any bassists I know. I'll have to ask.
All one of them?
Yeah, wow. You can only know one bassist. Because if you know two, that's just too much bass.
Yeah.
All your bass belongs to us.
No. That's a meme and I won't sit still for it.
Mm.
But someone also purchased It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, seasons 1-5, plus the Very Sunny Christmas special.
Good stuff. Good season this season, too.
Oh, boy.
I wonder how Jerry the Tapeworm's doing.
I got some emails from him, but I didn't have work today, so I didn't have to. Oh, man. So thank you, everyone, who purchased anything through our Amazon click-throughs. We greatly appreciate it. Before we get into TV talk, of course, we have the segment that is sweeping the nation, and that is Todd and Joe Have Issues.
Mm-hmm.
Where we are going to discuss the famous and possibly maligned Batman the Killing Joke by Alan Moore and Brian Boland.
Yes.
So, I reread this, and I think it was for the first time in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I still like this.
I do too.
So, you know, and if you look at the comment section, you'll see friend of the show, Mark Cole, had mentioned that, you know, while a lot of the stuff that happened in this, much like Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen, ends up being negative because of the inferior copycats. And he kind of says that in hindsight, there's not much to praise in this. And I sadly would have to disagree with that because, you know, while the art is beautiful, I think it is a good, in and of itself, Batman Joker story. And I think where the problems come in is that the fact that it has kind of been made canon, where it was never intended to be. I guess if that sure. makes any sense.
I know what you're saying. It's not necessarily an Elseworlds story, but because it's so closely tied to, like the continuity that was going on at the time. But I would agree a little bit with what Mark said in that what dilutes it is not the story, is the returning to the well for Barbara all the time on this, which was a tragic point in her time. But I think it affects the same thing with Aquaman, where it was like Barbara Gordon only has one truly memorable story, like that stood out for years. Now, granted, Birds of Prey came along and that kind of changed things. But for years it was this. The same way with Aquaman, it was the death of Aquababe. And we would return to that when Black Manta would show up. And it was like, you killed my son, blah, blah, blah. So if you don't have a lot of iconic stories, if you have one, it's going to pop up a lot. And I think he's right and it dilutes it because it's reused so often, but it's also reused not as well as Alan did. I totally agree with that, but I don't think it dilutes the original story at all. If I'm making any sense of it.
No, you are. And the fact that tragedy was Batgirl's defining story.
Mm-hmm. But in the same thing, and this is one of those things that we're people are going to argue that it's, you know, on women. I look at it as the same thing as Aquaman's defining story is tragedy too. You know what I mean? Most comic book stories, with the exception of comedies, the superheroes, you know, iconic moments are tragedy.
Right, but son, I think a lot of the other characters that we discuss, whether you're talking your Batmans, your Supermans, your Spider-Mans, or whomever's, there's so many stories to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a character like an Aquaman or like a Batgirl, it's one.
Right, that's right, yes.
So it sticks out more. where you don't realize that every Batman story is tragic, or every Superman story that's great is tragic, or every Spider-Man story that's great is tragic, because you're talking about multiple stories. And you're like, man, Spider-Man has a lot of good stories, or, you know, whatever. Whereas Aquaman, it's just like, oh boy, this horrible story. And then Batgirl at the time, it's this horrible story. Now, obviously, they've done a lot to kind of get themselves away from this sort of thing.
Right.
For better or for worse, I say. You know, your mileage may vary in regards to your feelings and the way that the character is treated in this book, and therefore treated going forward over the last 20-some-odd years that the book was out. But I think when writers don't use that story as a crutch, but a way to tell better stories, which a lot more writers have done over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, I think Killing Joke can still exist, if that makes any sense, and you could still have good Batgirl stories going forward. You can't... If you're letting one bad story from 30 years ago hamper your story today, then you need to be a better writer.
And the thing is, people are like, oh, it should go away. The people who are like, it should go away because of this or that reason. And I'm like, okay, that's your opinion. But you know what? As long as that book sells,
yeah,
that's the reason that this has never gone away. Is because every time a recolored, by the way, the recolored art on Brian Michael Bendis, Bolin's art on this is so much better. I read it and so much the coloring. Oh my God. Without those neons. So beautiful. So beautiful. This is the one time that I praise changing of a thing. I'm not going to be all like, oh, Lucas, you know, he Lucas this book, but I like it, but it's not going to go away until the whole, I'm trying to think of the words that I want to use, the whole selling of it, because there's other stories that are great that never become as iconic because they don't have the selling power. And every time, you know, New 52 pops up or this, and they're like, oh, we're going to change it. I'm like, no, they're not, because Killing Joke still sells for reasons, and it's going to be around.
Now, I will say this. I did not watch the recent animated version.
I did.
Okay. Did you like it? Did you not like it? I didn't hear a lot of good things about it.
It wasn't that good. I forgot when I watched it that in the comic, he actually does a song in the comic. He's singing to Jim Gordon while he's trying to drive him insane. And in the thing, you actually see the song, and it is so terrible to me, like, that it's so out of place, because now you're seeing this wacky song in this dark, dark story, and the art is very flat, because they're not going to put the money into animation that you're going to do to capture Bolin's art. So that, like, which is 50% of the Killing Joke, like... It doesn't work in this story, in the animation. And then they tacked on the whole Barbara Gordon having a love affair with Bruce before she retired. Because a lot of people think in The Killing Joke that this is what ended her career as Batgirl. Now, it made it impossible to come back, but she had retired before Killing Joke.
Right. That was the one thing that I remember about this is that, you know, she had been long retired, you know, long in comic book sense, retired as Batgirl when this happened.
I don't know how long, maybe only a couple years. Like, I don't know what you're thinking by long, because I remember the special where she retired. There was a Batgirl special.
Okay.
And I don't think it was too long before it. Like, I'd have to look that up, and I don't have it in front of me, but... So, yeah, she didn't retire because of the Killing Joke. You get a lot of mileage out of the Killing Joke.
So, all in all, not a terrible, not to be as maligned as it is in 2017 by people. But it's a good book. It's a beautiful book by Brian Boland, and this is one of the things that... make me lament that Brian Bolin no longer does actual physical art.
He didn't do a lot of art. Well, he did the Killing Joke. I actually saw a Killing Joke page at a con, and I was like, oh, my God. years ago, and it had like $250 in pencil on the back, but that wasn't what they were asking. I was like, because if it was, I would own that. But yes, him, the only thing he does is roughs in pencil anymore, and finished artwork is nothing. It's all on the digital, and seeing him do commissions is interesting because it's a sliding scale. It's like, all right, what do you want? I want a Joker. All right, here's my $100, $200, $300, $400, $500. What do you want? And I don't know if he'll slide the schedule. Like, he's like, there's my $100, and it's very undetailed to the $500, which is amazing. And then I think as he goes along, if you're like the $100, you're like, as long as you're not wandering off at the con, he's like, go up to the $200, go up to the, and he'll keep going. You know what I mean? But I just love the way he does, and he only does like five of them a show. So
right.
I don't think I'll ever be seeing one in my sketchbook, to tell you the truth. Unless we hit it big. If we hit it big, then I'll get a book.
Got to save up for that one.
Yes.
So that's this week's Todd and Joe Have Issues. What book are we going to be talking about next week, Todd?
We have done a lot of iconic books, a lot of Marvel and DC books. Now I'm going with one of my personal favorites, and I'm not even sure how it's received by the rest of the world, but I don't care. It is a Mirage book, independent. It is the Raphael one-shot from the original Mirage run, one of a one-issue micro-series, the first appearance of Casey Jones.
I think this one was on the list of stuff that we were eventually going to get to, but yeah, I'll be interested to check this one out. Mm-hmm. Now, was this where they did like, it was like a four-issue miniseries, each one was about one of the four turtles?
Right. I don't think they were because they were all numbered number one of their individual ones, and they were each one in a micro-series, so I'm not sure how they did it. But yes, this was actually, I think, the first one, because originally it was somewhere in between a regular comic and Treasury size. It was oversized, because I know I had to get a bigger bag and board for it.
Right.
And then they shrunk the, like, Michelangelo and the Donatello and the Leonardo ones down to regular comic size.
You would think with it being called a micro issue, it'd be much smaller than everything else.
Touche. Very right. Good.
Trebuchet.
That's a thing that shoots things across great distances.
Right, like a catapult or something.
Right. We discussed those on when I said how I wanted to have my funeral, but in one of the After Darks.
So I'll be looking forward to checking this one out.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully with all the free time that I have.
Oh, boy. Well, now the snow's cleaned up.
You're good to go. It's all gone. It disappeared.
I'm hoping we get an 80-degree day with heavy rains to make it all go away.
Yes, because we need flooding.
Oh, who doesn't?
So be sure to check out the show on Twitter at Longbox Heroes. Be sure to check me out on Twitter. I'm Joe Sposto. I actually have a wrestling event locally this weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
If the world isn't ended still. In Moosic for Independence Pro for their debut event, I will be doing a commentary there at the Moosic Youth Center in Moosic, PA. So if you're a local person, come check out the show. I recommend it. There's a lot of interesting indie talent that doesn't usually make it to the northeastern sectors of Pennsylvania that'll be on this show, myself included, if you call what I do talent. But there you go.
I don't, and who knows? I might even be there. Maybe we'll do a photo ops for a nickel.
Oh, there you go.
With Joe and Todd.
We'll do the booth in the middle of the ring. I'll be Sabu, and you'll be the princess or whatever.
Joe and Todd have photos.
Oh. Anyway, Todd's on Twitter at Roker the Joker, and of course you can follow Todd's other account, which is Todd's Art Attack, and we did have something sent to us this week. We had from Jesse DeJong. Jesse A. DeJong is the Twitter handle. It was another Havoc. He's a big Havoc fan. By Jesse Munoz, who is an artist on Hellboy. And that is a pretty funky-looking Havoc, I tell you that.
And he's angling to get an upgrade, I saw on Twitter.
What do you mean?
Oh, the artist came back and said, wow, I drew that years ago. That's not, I wasn't very good back then. And he's like, I should do you another one. The guy's like, Jesse's like, oh, I'll take that. And he's like, when I see you, maybe, maybe. And I have a request for what he should get.
Yes.
He should get a Havoc that fell into a big pile of garbage. And the title of the piece could be called Wreaking Havoc.
Shameful.
There's the sound I work for right there.
So be sure to follow us in all those places. You know, soon to be named network.com, of course, for all the podcasts and our little fancy network of things here. And we're going to get into TV talk. So if you did not watch or don't care about Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, or Walking Dead, we bid you adieu, and we'll catch you all here next week. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there, and I'll give you like a five-second Mississippi here to skedaddle if you don't care about this sort of stuff. All right. So, Flash, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that we forgot from last week's episode of Flash, with all the Flash stuff that was going on with the apes and whatnot, was that the episode ended with Barry proposing to Iris.
Yes.
And within seconds of this episode starting, I knew what was up. In that, I knew that Barry did this to try to change the timeline more.
Well, at least Iris will never find out.
But as we learned, Wally is having visions of Savitar dancing like sugar plums in his head. So with the help of Cisco's funky vibe technology, he decides to send Wally back to the point, the flashpoint, if you will, where Savitar kills Iris, notices Iris doesn't have an engagement ring on, comes back, blabs, stooges this off to everyone.
Oh my goodness.
Like the stooge rooster that he is. And of course, that's your impetus for what happens in this. As the show continues on with Wally not only having visions of Savitar, but also visions of his deceased mother, and so on and so forth, of these sort of things happen. But then they figure out what's going on with Savitar, why he's appearing, how he's appearing, and then, of course, the fate of one of the much-beloved characters. I'll give you a hint. It's the one who, from last episode to this episode, has a completely different haircut.
What?
I don't know if you noticed that.
I didn't notice.
Okay. Go back and watch the last 2 weeks' episodes. And spoilers, everyone, it's Wally.
Oh, boy. Well, he couldn't get a haircut in between scenes?
He has a completely different style of hair. And it was jarring to me.
Oh, my goodness.
Almost as jarring as the terrible CGI that happens in some of these shows.
Okay,
like,
I have...
Why? I'm like, why does Wally have a different haircut? What's going on here?
Okay, I want you to rank your ire on the CW superhero shows. Bad CGI.
Yep.
Wally's change in hair abrupt. And... Heat Waves, big head with little hats.
You're also forgetting, it is different than Wally's new haircut, but it's also the terrible wig work on Legends of Tomorrow, specifically okay. The George Lucas episode.
Okay, so let's still three things. Bad hair, little hats on big heads, and terrible CGI. Rank those from least favorite, or
most egregious to least egregious?
Yes, or the other way. Doesn't matter, but...
Okay, so most egregious is the bad CGI.
Okay.
Then is the bad hair or changing hairstyles. And then last is, because it was an isolated incident. Now, if there's multiple times during the course of the show where things, like, where they accentuate how big... Heatwave's head is, and how certain things don't fit him or do fit him or whatever. Because I remember back to the episode where they went back to like the 20s or whatever,
mm-hmm.
And everyone had more, like, it was more or less like, here's a box of hats, right? And
right.
Everyone had the same hat. So mm-hmm. They were more than likely all the same size. And the hat looked strange on Heatwave because he's got, the actor who plays him has a bigger head.
And whether or not this was a conscious decision, or they just decided, hey, we're too lazy to go buy a hat that fits this guy's head.
Or it works better because he wouldn't care.
Right, or it works better that he wouldn't care, right? But it was, like, I'm all for hats being too small for his head, mm-hmm. as opposed to something that is universally known as a small item fitting his head perfectly.
See, what I want is each time era for him to get a tiny hat to collect. Like, it's like, it's
that's
like
his mixed trophy room tiny hats.
Yes, it's Mick Rory's tiny hat collection, and it's like he has the little Napoleon hat, he's got a little cowboy hat, he has a little fedora from the 20s.
Hey, let me see if I can try this out. It's my memories of all the places we've been. You got a problem with that egghead? No, it's terrible.
Hey, haircut. Let me borrow your hat. I want to put on a tiny hat.
All right, so back to Flash. We're all over the place. Right. I liked this episode of The Flash. I thought... Now, there's another thing that we can mention. Under normal circumstances, Savitar has mostly been a CGI person.
Mm-hmm.
This episode, it seems there was many shots of him as a guy in a suit, which I appreciate very much.
I kind of do, too. I'm just not... This is one of those where I'm not a big fan of Savitar because I don't know how much I've talked about it, where I'm a bigger fan of the comic book version of Savitar. Course.
Right.
Right, and I understand that. But this one, I'm like, to me, I don't know what they're doing and where they're going, but I like this.
Okay, so this was them teasing that Savitar is someone that Wally knows.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, and they do a gimmick where, like, oh, the reason he keeps bipping and boffing is because he's trapped in the Speed Force. He can only get out for a short amount of time, unless he gets someone to replace him in the Speed Force, which he does in Wally, so now he's here for good.
Mm-hmm.
But, like I said, this is the first time that they've ever revealed that he is someone that Wally knows.
So, for the first time in a Flash TV show, we're getting a speedster who's closely acquainted to Barry, who's a bad guy. This is an original idea.
Whilst Todd is making a joke about this being a well-worn trope, I enjoy it very much.
I don't at this point. Especially, and I like the show. I don't want to be a naysayer, but it's kind of like, oh, well, somebody I know is a speedster, and he's going to, and he's a bad guy. And I'm like, oh my God, just get a different idea for the big baddie of the series. I hope they twist it on it, and I have an idea of where they're going, because I've heard of rumors of who might be showing up on the show.
Oh, come on, no rumors and innuendo here.
Could be really cool, because I know, like, things that they've done, and they could tweak it, but I'm like, I don't know. So, that's my take. And I don't like Grumpy Wally.
You should write the show a letter.
I should. Why is Wally so grumpy?
Why is his hair different in this episode? My friend wants to know.
Why is Joe so grumpy? Because of Wally's hair. But no, it's just that, like, Wally constantly does things that annoy me. And I get that he's supposed to, like, once again, he's the hot-headed kid, and I get that. But I just, like, oh my God, stop. Just stop what you're doing. And listen to somebody once in this show would be great. And the fact that he just blows Barry's cover on the ring to his sister I thought was cruel. You know what I mean? So, because he's like, we're trying to change history. Well, because I'm mad at Barry, I'm going to do this. And it gets us closer to Savitar killing my sister. I don't know.
Hmm.
Have I shot a few holes in Flash for you this week?
No, I still enjoy it very much.
Mm. Anyway.
So, like I said, I enjoyed it very much. You can't shake me from this.
I won't.
So, Legends of Tomorrow. Half the group is in, like, prehistoric time.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the group go inside Rip's head to try to get the good Rip back.
Right.
And then Nate and Amaya forget that time in the Civil War era where they had relations and just kind of say that they shouldn't be in a relationship.
No, they should be. It's Haircut who says they shouldn't be in the relationship.
Well, no, because remember she says at the beginning, like, oh, you know, I don't think we should. Oh, that's right, because he, yeah, that's right. Well, they're kind of wishy-washy, but then he says, oh, yeah, you can't because it's going to mess up some other thing.
Right, because when they're in the prehistoric time and Haircut's off to get his lizard dinner, they're going to start doing something. And he comes back and he does the whole thing to mess it up. And then she's, when they get back to the ship, she's like, oh, come to my cabin and everything. So they're kind of like, I'm not sure if it's technically a relationship or just, you know, they're having some fun. But he, like, Ray's telling him it's a bad idea because, and it's actually, Ray's actually right, because he's like, she has to go back to this time or the vixen. There's a, see, I don't know how much you know about this. There's a vixen in Arrow that's her daughter. And or daughter or granddaughter, I forget the whole, like, how long it's been. But Ray says to him, like, she has to go back, and all this horrible stuff's going to happen to her in her village. And I know it's going to happen because Vixen's granddaughter helped us out in a case with Arrow, and she's not a small timey. She's helped a lot of people as the JSAer. You can't have her just disappear and mess up the timeline because it'll screw everything up. And I like that. I thought that was actually really cool.
So I'm kind of giving this the short shrift, but I really like this episode as well. I like that Rip is back on the side of angels, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that they had a battle, like the versions of themselves, I guess, as Rick has imagined them, or Rip has imagined them.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this episode.
And I like Heatwave being in charge while Professor Stein has to be his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun.
So yeah, again, not really too much to talk about on this one other than the fact that, like, what do we end it with? The space stuff with Damian Dark there as the Doctor, I guess, getting ready to replace someone who's going to go on that space mission.
No, it was Zoom.
Zoom.
Or not Zoom, a Reverse Flash. He's like, oh, and I think he's going to use that gimmick where he takes their face for a while.
Right.
So he can go into space. And I'm pumped for a speedster in a small, tiny capsule in space. It's like, he ain't going to be doing a lot of running in that.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, that was good. Not, you know, great or anything like that, but yeah. So last but not least is Walking Dead. We lamented last week's episode as not being a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, this, I thought, was a great episode.
I thought it was really good, too. It was nice to see them remind us that Morgan has a tenuous grasp on reality at best.
Correct. So they are going to do a drop-off with the Saviors, and they, pronouns pal.
I don't know what you're doing.
I'll explain to you later. The Kingdom are going to do a drop-off with the Saviors. And they run into some problems on the way there. They get deterred. There's like a roadblock set up and all this other jazz. And then when they end up getting there, one of the items in their drop-off is missing. And the thing that I like about this group of Saviors is none of them are likable. They started to give one a little something this week, like the lead guy. But it wasn't so much that they were giving him, like, what they're trying to do with, and again, his name escapes me right now. Dwight. We're like, oh, he's this conflicted character, and we should all feel bad for him because whatever. It's like, this one is like, he's very put upon. He's put into a situation where he has to make these terrible decisions and do terrible things, and it's starting to wear on him as a human.
See, I differ slightly.
Okay.
I think he keeps realizing that this lackey keeps pushing the situation in the wrong moments. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, he's like, this is somebody who's supplying a lot of stuff to us. And you know, like, you're not Negan, the big guy. You're not in charge here either. And you keep busting people up. And you're going to rock the boat so much that this is going to turn bad eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's more along the lines of what he's doing. And he's telling him, like, start walking because of what you did. Like, do you understand the ramifications of what you've done here without, like, the leader's consent? You're just offing people who give us a lot of stuff. I don't know. That's my take.
Right, and I think that's part of it. But I definitely, like, even before they showed, like, they showed up, and he was already just, like, in a, all right, let's get this over with. And, like, this was even before that guy hit Jerry in the head with a stick.
Right.
You know, he was already like, I don't like doing this. This is starting to weigh on me. But they're not doing it in a way it's like, oh, we should feel bad for him because he's going to have a baby face turn. It's like, mm-hmm. No, he's just as horrible as everyone else. But we're starting to see that even the horrible people are a little bit human, just not likable humans.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the items are missing. The other guy, the rat-faced guy, whose mm-hmm. name escapes me here as well.
Who stole Morgan's stick.
Jared. As I'm looking over the cast list of names, it seems as though he's going to shoot Richard in the face, but instead he shoots Benjamin, the young kid, in the leg. Benjamin ends up dying. It's then later revealed, Morgan figures out that it was left, that somebody took, and it was like a melon or something, right?
Right. Well, they were one melon short, and he had stopped the whole caravan with the shopping carts to do it, and it's with the grave that was there, and it was all going to make sense eventually.
That you know Richard, what I mean? Right. Richard is the one who set it up because he thought if he did it, they would shoot him, which they almost did, but then they didn't because he just can't deal with it anymore. He saw his wife and daughter taken away from him, but now that he's lived and Benjamin has died, he's like, let's rally the troops. Let's convince Ezekiel to join up with, you know, Alexandria and everyone else, and let's all take down Negan.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan says nothing until they go deliver that melon, and Morgan snaps and just chokes the life out of Richard in front of everyone.
Right. Bangs his head off the ground a few
times.
Did
not see that coming.
That one I didn't see coming. Though I'm definitely interested in Morgan's reasons. I understand there's a lot of crazy going on in there. Because there is the moment where he's like, but they killed, and he mentions his son's name.
Mm-hmm.
And Ezekiel's like, who are you talking about? And he's like, oh, you know.
Benjamin.
Not Benjamin.
He's yeah.
Like, but he mentions his son name yep. first. And that was really cool. And he goes off. But I think he's following the script that, who was it, Jonathan made, where he's like, let's use this to get into their trust. Because he says everything Jonathan was going to say. You know, like,
right.
And so I'm like, is he using it? Because he tells Carol what's going on. It seems like he's now rallying the troops in a weird way. But then he goes off and sharpens his stick. So I'm not 100% sure if the crazy's seeping in again or if he actually has a plan to take down the Saviors.
Well, Morgan leaves, and he essentially, I guess, whatever his plan was to convince, and oh, that's the other thing, he goes to Carol, and everybody has not been telling Carol what's been going on, and he just goes and says, yeah, here's all the terrible thing that happened, everybody's been lying to you, I'm leaving. But that convinces Carol to finally go and join the kingdom, and leave, like, being off by herself.
Right, but I did like that she comes to him first and says, tell me everything, and he's like, no, you wanted to be alone, and whatever Daryl said to you is between you and him, and now you're coming, like, you told me to leave, never talk to you, stop bothering you, and now you come to me and you want information. He goes, go ask somebody else. And then he drops that in her lap before he leaves. But I think you're burying the biggest part of the episode
mm-hmm.
is when they when the Savior shoots into the thing, and we go to commercial, and that was the longest commercial of my life. Because I thought it was Jerry that he had shot.
Oh, no.
And Jerry was so happy and filled with cobbler that I was worried. I was like, oh, my God, he's so happy and content. He's sucking down cobbler. This is his moment to die. And he didn't. I was like, whew. Todd and Walking Dead didn't die in another episode.
I don't watch these with commercials, you know? So
right. You have the DVR to fast forward through them, but I didn't. So I had to sit there for 2.5 minutes worrying that Jerry was bleeding out, you know, cobbler coming out of his stomach hole.
Right. Oh, boy.
But, yeah, so that I liked. And I also like the assistant that they show someone who's terrified of Ezekiel's tiger.
Tiger in the in the opening flashback sequence looked like bad CGI, but the rest of the show looked like good CGI.
Okay.
Yes.
So it was good to see that it wasn't a filler episode like last week, and we're getting somewhere. So I don't know how many episodes we have left, but we got to be getting close.
Right.
Good times.
I would guess. Let me look here.
Look at you looking stuff up.
It's a reason I exist. La la la.
Fill in time.
The show's almost over.
I'm not looking at the clock, I swear.
I'm just looking at it because I have to make sure that it doesn't crap out again like it did before. Looks like we've got. One.
It was episode 13.
Two. Three more episodes this season.
I was right. It's not many.
Mm-hmm. It's not many at all.
I bet you the last episode will be an overlong, bloated episode. Where they stretch too much out. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be like an hour and a half long episode.
When they don't need it, usually. Except for those commercials, because, you know what? You could add another hour of bloated TV shows as long as I get that half hour of commercial money.
Right.
I'll take it.
There you go.
All righty, then.
Yes, everybody. So, thank you for listening to this episode, recorded under duress. We'll see how the editing on this one goes.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you're listening to this, you won't even know.
That's right.
And I guess, is there anything else that we need to discuss here?
Nope.
All right, everyone. For Todd, this is Joe closing out episode, what do we say, 367?
Yep.
360, let's be 367. 337.
That's what I meant to say.
337 of Long Box Heroes, and we'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.